the thought of what is idolatry. You know, because when we think of idolatry, we think of the people in the past. We think of their images. We think of all those kinds of things, the false gods. And we talk about sometimes what is idolatry today. But I think all too often we just kind of, we just kind of give lip service to that. So I want us to think about modern idolatry today. And I hope you can read most of those anyway. I think you'll see that a number of things there that we should recognize. And so let's begin again there where Matthew read for us in Romans chapter 1. And notice that it talks about God. And since the creation of the world, His invisible attributes are clearly seen. Why? Being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they who turn their back on God are without excuse. Although they knew God, they did not glorify nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, changed the glory of God for the creation. And notice verse 24. Therefore God also gave them up. It doesn't say God made them do it. God gave them up. This is what you want to do? Do it. To uncleanness, lust, etc. And in verse 26 again, for this reason God gave them up to vile passions. And in verse 28, which we did not read, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do things which are not fitting. All three of these places, God gave them up. God gave them up. When they refused to acknowledge God, God gave them up. And God will do that with every person. If we choose to reject Him, He will give us up to whatever it is. So what is an idol? And I think we all understand, you know, if I were to just ask each of you, what's an idol? Well, it's something or something, somebody, whatever, that gets between you and God. And I think that's a very good definition. But I want us to think about the fact that it is anything that is more important than God is to you. It is anything that absorbs your heart and your imagination more than God. In your mind, in your imagination, if there's anything that you spend more time on than you do on God, be careful. That's probably an idol. Because who should be the most important thing in our mind? And obviously, it's God. Anything you treasure that's more important to you than God. And again, I think there's some things that we may not realize, we might not think of in that light as an idol. And the last one, anything you're not willing to give up for God. And again, this is not usually the way we think of idols, is it? If I have something, and whatever it is, and you may say, well, this sin, that would certainly would fit. But I think there are other things that we're not willing to give up for God. And if we're not willing to give it up for God because it is something that is keeping us from God, is something that God does not approve, then that is an idol. And there's a whole lot of idols. And we don't have time to look at all of them. because I think, obviously, there are way more than we could ever even get to if we had the time. So let's think about, if you will, for a little bit, some of the more common idols, the ones we saw in that cow. And I think certainly one of the most common, at least in our mind again, is that of money and possession. That those are the kinds of things that are idols, that we let those get in front of our worship to God and our service to God. And that is certainly true. To many people, that's what it's all about. And we think about houses and cars and things of those natures. And I gotta have a big job with a big salary and so on and so forth. And those certainly are the idols of many people. They're very common. But there's other things. There was a man in St. Croix that we knew. And when one of the hurricanes came through, their house was fine. It suffered no damage at all. But he had been working every weekend for some time, getting his yard just right, just perfect. And you know what 80, 90, 100 mile an hour winds will do to yards. And he was crushed because all that work, all that he had been, that was what he spent his weekends on. It was gone. Was it an idol? Well, yeah, because I didn't tell you that he couldn't come to worship God until he got his garden, he's got his yard all set up. Yes, very definitely an idol. And this is one, you know, there's a lots of words, lots of ways that it's expressed, whether it's power or influence, whether it's approval from other people, whether it's fame, whatever exactly fame is to you, whatever success is, a career, all of these things can be idols. And there are a lot of people in these days that are chasing these things. It's all about my career. It's all about fame. It's all about power. Because I got to, you know, keep climbing the ladder so I can have more and more power. But all this also is temporary. And if that comes between you and God, it's an idol. What about family and culture? And religion. And am I saying that family necessarily is a bad thing? No. Although Jesus says, he that loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. He who loves that son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. But I think there's the family, the culture, the religion here is this idea of I am stuck in that. I can count my genealogy back to such and such a place. Why on my mother's side, I don't even know how far back, but he was the King of England's agent to the Cherokee people. And I mean, he was so important that he was married to one of the wives of one of the various chiefs. On my dad's side, her mother's side, they were immigrants who came. In fact, they were in the first boat that came from Germany to Texas, with one of the princes that was trying to find room for all the excess citizens they had. They didn't have enough land, and so on. But in the end, what does that matter? It doesn't. It doesn't matter at all. And yet sometimes people get so tied up in those things,
culture is another thing. And maybe, I don't think we're quite as given to that, but in a lot of places, we don't want to lose our culture. That's why we have the Honduran flag flying here. Because we don't want to lose that. Well, culture before God is wrong. Religion, if it's not the truth, if it's not true worship, is wrong. And that is something that is far too often. And this is one that I think we could spend all night on. I know we could. Selfishness. What's important to me? Entertainment, pleasure, even comfort. We're going to talk about this one in particular in a little more detail. But I think, again, when it's all about me, how much time does that leave for God? And is entertainment wrong? No. Pleasure wrong? No. As long as it's not a sin. Comfort? We all like our comfort. I've already said, I'm just much more comfortable doing things with lights and so on. But when it becomes all important, then there's a problem. And so these are some of the common idols. But let's get down to the base. What is the basis of all idolatry? And if you want to turn with me to James chapter 1. James chapter 1, there at verse 13. James here starts off saying, "Let no one say when he is tempted, 'I am tempted by God.' For God cannot be tempted by evil, nor does he himself tempt anyone. But each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires and enticed. Then when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is full grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brethren. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, and comes down from the Father of light, with whom there is no variation or shadow of turning." Now, as we look at these verses, and I'm going to start at the end here, verses 16 and 17. After talking about where sin comes from, where it leads, etc., what does he say in verse 16? Do not be deceived. Do not be deceived. And he goes on to say, every good gift and every perfect gift is from God. God is the source of every good gift, of every perfect gift. Now, what's the connection here? When you think about the gift, and I'm using that word and you'll understand, the gift that Satan presents to you, sometimes they look so wonderful, don't they? I mean, you talk about win-win situation, no having to give in or anything. But in the end, what are they? Are they good gifts? Are they fish hooks with bait on them? Every good gift is from God. And so when we look at what the devil presents, we need to be very careful. Because if it's not from God, if it's not in accordance and agreement with God's will, it's not a good gift. No matter what others tell you, no matter what you tell yourself. And so let's go back up then to verse 14 starting. It says, but each one is tempted when he is drawn away by his own desires. And he goes on to say that desire brings forth lust. And then it says, when desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And when it is and when it is full grown, it brings forth death. Desire, again, is there anything wrong with desire? Not in and of itself, no. There are good desires. There are desires that are neutral even. But when we see something, or we hear something, or we imagine whatever it is, we see that desire, we perceive it however it is, and we see it, and we see it for what it is. This is a sin, or this is going to lead to sin. We discard it. But it goes on to say then that desire then becomes lust. And the difference between desire and lust is strength. Desires, again, we can accept or reject. But when it gets to the point that we're lusting after it, that it's something that is always on our mind or frequently on our mind, even though, and maybe we don't even realize at this point, where is that going to go? Lust becomes sin. And what is the wages of sin? Their death. We know that. That's where sin comes from. That's where idolatry comes from. Is this little chain. When we are not careful, when we're just letting our guard down, even for a little bit. And so, as we think about again these things, I want us to think about particularly where the problem is. Worldly selfishness. And I've divided selfishness into a couple of sides, because I think there is what we would call worldly selfishness. Putting yourself first. And how many people do you know personally who live for pleasure? That's what it's all about. Whether it's entertainment, and I'm using that word very loosely to cover all the things, whether it's seeing and doing. And again, is it wrong to travel? No. Is it wrong to see new things? No. Do new things? No. But where is that in our life? What is it? I think sexual immorality is one of the greatest ones, one of the most obvious ones today. And if you watch TV, and I mean, even if you're not watching cable, the commercials are so many of them are so geared towards sex. They're using sexual images. There aren't many shows that are on cable that don't have some perversion of sex that they're pushing. Whether it's a homosexual couple, whether it's men or women, whether it's transgender, whether it's just whoever. It's there. And they're pushing it. And I think certainly we need to be very aware of that. But what about me and what I'm thinking? There are a lot of people that have an issue with that. Augustine, this is one of the theologians, early theologians in the 300s, made the statement, and he should know, because before he was converted to Catholicism, as it happened, he lived a very profligate life. And so when he says, a soul that turns away from you, and he's talking about God, therefore lapses into sexual immorality. Why? He says, because when it seeks apart from you what it can never find in pure and serene form except by returning to you, where is he going to go? If you're looking for love, If you're looking for that relationship and you're not looking for it with God, where are you going to go? You're going to go to sex. You're going to go to pursue it there. And unless you're pursuing it as God commands, it's not going to work. And as he says there, if I'm seeking it, if you're seeking it apart from God, we'll never find it. Because who loves us? Whose love for us is pure? Whose love for us is the serene, the peaceable? There's no one. And if that's where we're looking for it, we're not going to find it. And yet too many people are just running from one to the next, to the next, to the next. Someone was talking the other day about, well, this was my play wife. And he said, well, this was my trial wife. And in the context, he was talking, he had gotten married at a young age, and it didn't work out. And so that didn't last, so now he's been married to the one he's married to for a long time. But I think in the eyes of many, that's what we're talking about. If this one doesn't work, go on to the next one. And that's not what God says. Because God knows. Because a lot of people don't find the right one. They're down 4, 5, and 6 number. So worldly selfishness, putting yourself first. And again, comfort is one that I think is also very much in our culture today. And again, is comfort wrong? No. We have comfortable furniture at our house. We have a comfortable bed. We have, and so on and so on and so forth. And that's fine. But when comfort becomes the most important thing in my life, there's a problem. And sometimes it is that luxury. And always having the very best, the most comfortable. But I think, again, this is another one that we kind of don't even think about. We're asked to do something for God. Well, I'm not really comfortable doing that. Comfort. Comfort. God didn't call us to be comfortable. God calls us to suffer. And someone has coined a phrase, the retired Christian. And I understand too well, only too well. Can, as we get older, can we do the same thing we used to do? No. Even if you're in your pretty good health, you don't have the ability. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Christians who get to a certain age and suddenly she doesn't want to teach children's classes anymore. No, I've done that long enough. It's the young people's turn. Or the man may say that. Or, you know, we're not really going to be members of any particular congregation because we want to travel and we want to go here and we want to go there. And it's kind of like, yes, we're still Christians, but, you know, we're backpedaling because we've done our part. It's like when you retire from your job and you know, I don't really have to work like that. I get it, and I'm not complaining about that. But being a Christian doesn't end until you die. What does Jesus say in Revelation chapter 2, verse 10? Be faithful
unto death, and I will give you the crown of life. So thinking about this idea of it's too much, and I think we understand that money and stuff can be part of either one of these that we've already talked about. Then there's that prideful selfishness, and that's where position and power and prestige and approval, being accepted by the right people, success in your past, and that's where I'm talking about your ancestors, your culture, even the idea, and this is not uncommon, the one I've hit most is, well, we've always been Catholics. But another family I know could say, well, we've always been Presbyterians. And it's not anybody here. And so, and that means what? Why does it become a problem for you to even look at and think about that maybe there could be a problem there? No. We've always been Catholic. I'm Catholic in my bones. Again, that is pride. If I were to change, I might hurt my family, but I think more than anything, if I had to change, I would have to admit that I was wrong. And I don't want to do that. That just, I can't do that. And again, sometimes, I think with many people, money is really a measure of who I am, what I'm worth. How much money do I have? I don't know. But that isn't who you are. That's just stuff, if you will. And I want us to close with this thought about idolatry. And this is a man who's a psychologist. And his point is, and I think that why is idolatry so common and have such a draw? Because, as he says, rather than looking to the Creator and to have to deal with the fact that He is Lord, and if He's Lord, what does that imply? That I have to obey Him. We instead orient our lives toward the creation. Isn't that what Romans 1 said? Forgetting God, go after the creation. Why do we do that? Because when we're talking about God's creation, whether it's us, whether it's animals, whatever it is, we can be more free to control those things. And while we're in so doing, we can shape our lives in the way we wanted to go. We want to go. And I think that is something that we all need to be aware of, because idolatry is there. And the devil has a temptation for each one of us. Not just one. He has many. And so, as we live, I think this is maybe not daily examination, but frequent examination we need to think about. Where am I? What is it that's most important to me? Is it God or is it other things? Idols. And the song that we're going to sing in just a moment is very appropriate. Because what's the point? All to Jesus I surrender.
Is that easy?
No. Are there things where areas where it's easy? Yes. But there are those areas that where it's not easy. And I think that's where we have to